From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 328, recorded live Saturday, July 14th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with John O'Bacon about the art of community.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here at OSCON in Portland, Oregon, the O'Reilly Open Source Conference, and I've got the pleasure of sitting down with John O'Bacon, who is the community manager for Ubuntu, and also the author of the very lovely Art of Community book, which I have in front of me from O'Reilly as well. We'll have links to that. It's a great book. I feel little embarrassed because I've got the book here, and it's all like marked up.
It's good to see that.
With like,
it looks like somebody read it finally at last.
Well, it's been very well received. So, from one community manager to another, that's kind of a tough word. I mean, I like community. We all love that word. Community is a great word, but then manager implies, you know, you're herding, you're controlling.
Right.
What is
right.
it? You know, community manager. Is manager the right word we should be using?
This has been, I think, an often debated topic. Because I think some people do perceive that the word manager means almost like a controlling entity.
Handler.
Exactly. But I've never really been somebody who really gets into these kinds of semantic debates. I think a lot of it is really the intention of the person who's doing the work. So if you have you could have a fantastic person who coordinates and enthuses and empowers a community. And you could call them a community manager, and you could have someone who's terrible and they force and dominate and push people forward, and call them a community manager as well. I think it really depends on the intention. I think if some people feel uncomfortable by the concept of the word being manager, I think it's sometimes reflective of the fact that they've maybe had bad managers in the past. Like for me, the word manager doesn't necessarily mean controlling. It just means somebody who helps to coordinate and move things forward. And that to me is the primary goal of a community manager. But different communities work in different ways. You know, the semantics are sometimes not right for certain people and right for other people. But I think it's more important to assess the work that someone's doing as opposed to the description or the label.
Why does a community need a manager at all? Why don't we just self-organize around our interests?
That's another good question, because I think that some communities do. I mean, you have different types of governance, essentially. So, for example, you have, you know, some communities are leaderless, you know, and a good example of that is KDE in the open source world. They effectively have no leader, but they have a set of people who are inspirational leaders. Mm-hmm. Then you have, of course, you know, dictators, like with Linux. I mean, Linus Torvalds is a dictator, or benevolent dictators for life, such as with Ubuntu. I think, again, every community is different, but one of the things that I've noticed is that the skills that are required to help motivate and empower people are relatively rare, you know, and having somebody who's in a position to help herd the cats in the right direction, essentially, which is not, you know, brainwashing people to move in a particular direction, but helping to empower people, is a really valuable function. So I think communities can exist without community managers or leaders, but you can often squeeze much more out of a community if you do have somebody who's helping to do that. In the same way that if you have a great conventional manager in an engineering team or elsewhere, a great manager with the trust of the team, the trust of the stakeholders, can just do incredible things.
Doesn't it seem like the back and forth between let's all have a meritocracy and we'll all work together versus let's have a hierarchy of managers and moderators and super users and then regular people and noobs? You've got GitHub, which is famously announcing, you know, we have no managers, we have no plan, we just have awesome ideas and you pick something and you just be awesome. And if you get enough people that are awesome, then awesome things will happen.
Right, right.
And then, you know, even in a community like yours, you've still got, you know, lieutenants and a bit of a structure. I wouldn't say a deep structure, but there are moderators and people that if you're not around, they're making sure that things are moving forward as well.
Yeah. Even, you know, when you find groupings, whether it's a company or a project or a community, whatever it might be, and they say that we don't have management or leadership, I think they're lying. Every group of people has management or leadership in some capacity. It just might not necessarily be as formalized. In the same way that even with my example earlier on of a essentially leaderless community like KDE, there are leaders in that community, but they're more inspirational leaders. You know, they're people who propose ideas, and those ideas get traction because of the work that they've done, which is why I think meritocracy is the best way to run a community, essentially. But, you know, the way in which we identify our leaders does vary tremendously. And one of the things that we've done in Ubuntu is to try and scale out our leadership. So it's reflective of the scale of the community. So, you know, back in the early days, you know, we'd have a community council and a technical board, and that's all we really needed in terms of technical and community policy. But these days, as the community's grown, we need more leadership defined. And I think there is a big difference between governance and leadership. Our governing boards in Ubuntu don't really lead per se. What they do is they help to govern and help to make sure that things are on track and that the community's happy and that the policies are fair and representative. But there's actually very few leaders, I think, in most communities who actually have that natural thing in the back of their heads that help them to help other people be successful. And that, to me, is the true definition of leadership, is helping other people to be successful.
What does that mean, governance, to you? Because the first time I ever heard the term governance, even though the obvious roots in government and to govern, I mean, I get that, and I learned all that in social studies, but the word governance, the first time I came upon that was doing W3C work. Right. And it always meant endless meetings and the people who are the most interested in parsing all the words.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. One of the things that concerns me about some approaches to community management and leadership is that there is a tendency to suggest that we need governance and we need process to be quote unquote professional, that we're not real unless we have these pieces. I'm very much of an anti-bureaucracy kind of person. I don't like paperwork. I don't like unnecessary processes and all the rest of it. And so I think you should only apply it when it's absolutely necessary. To me, the best kind of governance that you have is pretty thin, and it's often hidden to most people. And I see it primarily as the value of that governance is really one part escalation path, because it gives the community a means in which they can take concerns with the wider structure of the community, particularly if there's a commercial stakeholder, to an objective base. But secondly, it's really to keep things honest. By and large, most of the governance that I've seen, the meetings are often, you know, pretty straightforward. It's almost rote in the way that people go through them. It's like we have a set of topics, we talk it through, we maybe do a vote or whatever it means. It's actually relatively straightforward and simple, and usually fairly efficient and effective. I suspect in government it's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I think a focus on that simplicity is really important. The problem with the word governance is it's really loaded, and it conjures up ideas of reams and reams of manuals and codification and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that's an enemy of community. Any unnecessary paperwork and fluff like that is going to do harm.
Mm-hmm. How much do you get involved in that? I mean, how much should a community manager be involved? Like, you know, I'm kind of part of the ASP.NET community, and now that we are open source, should I be poking around in check-ins and moderating and mediating conflicts between the team in Redmond and people who are trying to get their patches submitted? Or should I be an advocate for Microsoft, or should I be an advocate for the community?
I did some quite a bit of thinking about this some years ago. Mark Shuttleworth, the founder of Ubuntu, he didn't ask me to join the Ubuntu Community Council, but he basically said, you know, if you were interested in joining it, I would definitely support that motion. He basically said, you know, if you want to join it, you know, you've got my vote. And I think that if I applied to be on the community council, I'd probably get on it. But I deliberately, I did some thinking about this, and it kind of shook me up for a few days, because I was thinking, on one hand, it's a great service to the Ubuntu community, and my goal here is to serve my community. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I think there's a valuable function in me not being on that board for two reasons. One is selfish and lazy, which is, it's more work.
Right, and boring meetings.
And I'm not really into like those kinds of long meetings. But the second thing, more importantly, is if people have reservations about something to do with the community council or members of the community council, mm-hmm. They will often come to me. So I kind of float in between all of these governance bodies. And I think that provides a useful function. Sometimes I'll go into meetings and if there's conflict, I'll go in there and I'll represent a third party almost, but a third party that's seen as leadership in the community. So my inclination is if you're in a more formalized position, like a community management position in a community, I think it's healthy not to be in the governance. The other thing is I'd prefer that seat that I would be on to be just open to another community member who's probably going to do a better job of it than I would anyway.
But you do, like me, you do draw a paycheck, right? I mean, you are an employee. You're not a contractor.
That's right.
Right. So you are an employee of the Ubuntu...
Of Canonical.
Of Canonical.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm an employee of Microsoft. And I assume that the same thing happens to you that happens to me, which is you say something publicly, your blog or Twitter or whatever, that is genuinely and truly in your heart of hearts, your opinion.
Yeah.
And someone takes it as, oh, yeah.
Always, know, yeah.
He's on the corporate dole.
He's throwing the corporate line out there.
Yeah. So, like, officially, I'm not allowed to have opinions on effectively anything. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I've got an iPhone. I use Google Plus. I'm not allowed to have opinions of any of that stuff.
Right. Okay.
If I say anything about PHP, everyone's going to clearly say that I value my job over my...
Right.
And I'm always saying to myself, you know, one of these days, I'm just going to quit just to make a point that I am really, truly unbiased. You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, are you unbiased? Can you be unbiased? Should you be unbiased?
I think so. When I joined Canonical 6 years ago, I wrote this blog entry called On Trust. And it was essentially a declaration that I was making to the community, essentially saying that I see myself in a fairly unique position where I see I think some people see my responsibility is to keep Canonical honest. I've heard a bunch of people say this, but I think my responsibility is to also keep the community honest as well. The relationship people often distinguish between, you know, this person either works for Canonical or they're a member of the community, and that kind of rubs me up the wrong way.
Right, you can't be both,
right? Because the thing is, in my mind, is that you're a community member. You might be working for a company that pays you to work on community related content like Ubuntu, but you're still a part of the community. Canonical are a member of the community. As much as anybody else. Of course, we have a lot more influence in many ways because of the historical nature of the investment in Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me that some people kind of, some people will sometimes think that I'm maybe spinning a line, but I think a lot of that is building that trust in the community. And a lot of that, I think, is about showing that you are an individual. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've made very, very clear to our community and, you know, people at Canonical know this as well, is that if I ever felt like Canonical was going in the wrong direction, that we were compromising on the values of Ubuntu that we set forth with, I'll be gone. I consider maintaining my values and my integrity more important than maintaining that paycheck that's coming in. Because I know I can leave Canonical and get another job. I'll just do something myself if the worst comes to the worst.
Right.
But I consider my integrity to be the number one thing. But the good thing about Canonical is that, and again, this probably sounds like a line to some people, is that Canonical has never put me in a position where I have to challenge my integrity because genuinely from the top down of the company, from Mark Shuttleworth and Jane, the values of Ubuntu have been protected like very strongly from day one. And the challenge is that sometimes people don't see that because the company's grown and all the rest of it.
Right.
But I think defining that trust is critical for community managers. And I'll never forget the very first Ubuntu Developer Summit that I attended in 2006. I gave my first presentation in front of the community. And I came out of left field. I wasn't really an active contributing member of Ubuntu. I wrote a book about it with some other people. And I did my first presentation wearing a death metal t-shirt. And the reason why I did that was because I was wanting to make it clear that I am my own person as well. People know that I listen to music, I listen to heavy music, and, you know, I have this stupid beard and all the rest of it. And that's not changing. And spending some time with the community to try and, you know, define that, you know, I'm somebody who you can trust and I will be held accountable for my own actions, and I will hold a Canonical accountable for their actions if they step in the wrong direction. But also, I think it's important to hold your community accountable because it's not like it's a one-way relationship. Sometimes community members can be really unrealistic and disrespectful towards companies. I'm sure you've seen this in your own world, where people are critical in ways that they shouldn't be. There's an anti-company culture in a lot of open source.
Right.
And I think it's important to not only confront companies when they're being unreasonable, but to confront communities as well.
one of the things that I'm feeling the most helpless about is that my organization is like, so it's an onion, right? So there's like, there's the 15 folks that I work with on a regular basis that like work on ASP.NET. And there's like the 100 that work on the parts of the cloud that I'm interested in, the 600 that are around that. And that those 600 people are kind of like my tribe.
Right.
It's a medium-sized company. Yeah. And if you look back at the last 20 years of my career, I've worked for companies of sizes ranging from 100 to 600 people.
Right.
So it's a very comfortable place.
Right.
But Microsoft is 80,000 people.
Yeah.
And they'll do stuff that has nothing to do with anything that I have to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh man, Microsoft sucks, you know. There was some stupid sexist thing that happened in Norway a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And it was like one rogue Norwegian marketing guy makes everyone look bad.
Right.
Now that Canonical is getting bigger and bigger, aren't there things that they could potentially do that don't really affect you, but it could make you look bad? And then you have to say, well, this, I'm not going to quit just because, you know, Windows does something bad because I don't work on Windows.
Right. To me, Canonical is going to spin out in lots of different directions and has done. I mean, you know, when I joined, there was about 45 of us, I think it was.
That's a nice size.
You know, there wasn't many of us, and now we're over 550. And
wow. See, that's right about the size where you just can't know everybody.
Yeah, definitely. And that's been unsettling as time's gone on, because I used to know everyone in the company. But I mean, Canonical's diversifying and going off in different ways. And of course, you know, nothing's ever perfect. I mean, there have been decisions made in the company that I haven't been particularly supportive of. Mm-hmm. But usually when I'm not supportive of those decisions, it's not because I feel like it's questioning our values as a company and our values in our relationship with Ubuntu.
I see.
To me, you know, there's been some technical decisions that have been made that I just thought, that's just stupid. I mean, it's just stupid. Mm. And I'd never go out there and support that in terms of saying, yeah, this is a brilliant idea. I wouldn't lie about it by any stretch.
Well, and this is where you're making the point that you're not a press release machine.
No, exactly. But I'm also conscious of the fact that, you know, just because there's a mentality in some people that if they don't like something, then they have to throw it under the bus. And if they do like something, they have to, you know, draw it in lights.
Right.
They're very extreme personality. And my view is, I will always try and strive to maintain a level of professionalism around things that I don't support. Mm-hmm. So I'll be supportive primarily in trying to solve that problem. And if I like something, then it's just my personality is, if I like stuff, I'll just go on about it to people.
Yeah.
Until people say, shut up. I don't care about what you're going to
do. Yeah, I think we're similar in that respect.
Right, exactly. And it's so essentially what I'm saying is I would never go out there and advocate for something that I didn't agree with. But what I won't do is I won't throw it under the bus as well. Mm-hmm. And Canonical is going to diversify. But if I felt like my values in terms of the project or the values of Ubuntu was compromised, that's where I would find I would become unstuck. Mm-hmm. But there was, I had a session at the Community Leadership Summit this weekend about the structural integrity of a community and the importance of defining that. And just a recent experience, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. And I think everyone judges their communities on their structural integrity, the people and the mission and the ethos. And what has kept me at Canonical and what's kept me excited about Ubuntu is that I feel like in all these years, the structural integrity of the project hasn't been compromised. I trust Mark Shuttleworth. I trust our CEO. I trust my boss. I trust my team. I trust the community. So that gives me the confidence that we can essentially traverse over all obstacles because mm-hmm. the structural integrity is sound. If I felt like Mark, as an example, was taking us in the wrong direction, was going against our values, then I'd feel like the structural integrity was compromised and I feel like we couldn't solve those problems. That's kind of the way I determine it.
So that's really interesting. And you've mentioned Mark a number of times because I think that I have noticed this in community managers that I've spoken to and people like myself as well, where for me, Scott Goo is the guy that runs Azure. I've worked for him effectively in three different orgs as we've moved around. And each time he moves, I end up moving as well.
Right.
Because you know, and it's this uncomfortable bit of like, you know, he's my friend, he's my boss, but I also follow him to the ends of the earth.
Right.
And we always joke internally about we serve at the pleasure of the goo. when Azure, our cloud, came out originally, I was silent about it because I didn't agree.
Right.
I didn't write any scathing blog posts. I didn't go out and be controversial. I simply said nothing.
Right.
Because if you can't say anything nice, You just don't say anything.
Don't say it, right.
Right. So I think that we share that.
Right.
And then, but it all came down to trust in his technical vision and his integrity.
Yeah.
And while I don't think Microsoft is the kind of evil we may have been in the 90s, I know for a fact, because I know Scott, that he's not evil. So I can like look at the org chart and I can say, okay, from here down, I am totally 100% confident that they trust in the integrity of the community and I know what his values are.
Yeah,
exactly. So I'm cool with that.
That's, yeah, it's very, very similar for me as well. So, you know, I've known Mark Shuttleworth for years now, and he is a friend. I consider him to be a friend. He's obviously a colleague. Mm-hmm. And a big chunk of this is that I trust him as a human being. So it's a very similar kind of relationship in the sense of, don't get me wrong, he can be difficult and he can be he can be obnoxious at times and he can be a pain to work with. But in all honesty, those cases have been very rare, and mm-hmm. I'm sure that I've been difficult and obnoxious and a pain to work with just as much.
Isn't it the thing, though, with brilliant people is that they're obnoxious and they're frustrating and they insist, and then months later, you're like, they were right well.
Yeah, you think, they're always right. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the thing that I wouldn't say upsets me, that frustrates me at times is, you know, Mark's a very visible person. So everyone's got an opinion about him in the open source world. And some people, I think their opinions are unfair because as the company's grown and as he's, you know, busy himself in growing Ubuntu and growing Canonical, his visibility has dropped off a little bit in terms of the community. He still actively attends community council meetings and he responds to email and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think some people have perceived that as he doesn't really care about the ethos of the community as much as he used to.
See, and the parallels are uncanny. The same thing happened. Scott Goose disappeared. Well, he's busy being manager.
And that's one of the things that I've learned about community management is that if you don't have that visibility as much, then people perceive the fact that you're not doing anything. And I've had to wrestle with that over the years at times when I've had a busy release cycle focused on Canonical stuff a little bit more because we've been growing and trying to onboard people. But the thing that I see sometimes internally that wouldn't be appropriate to talk about publicly is, I mean, I've seen Mark like chastise a manager in front of a group of people because that manager has questioned, as suggested that we may maybe compromise on the ethos of Ubuntu. You know, Mark will say, that's not why I started this. I started this because I have a clear vision about free software and delivering a strong free software based platform. Mm-hmm. And I find those situations reassuring because, of course, you know, I was kind of expecting, like many people, that at some point he'll change. He'll get bored and move on.
Yeah, you expect that there's the public face, and then internally there's some little face of evil that will show itself. And then when you're talking about in internal meetings, that no one would ever hear about, no one would ever talk about, the value is still there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I saw this, you know, quite recently. Actually, I was in Vienna for a set of meetings, and Mark was, you know, I mean, he wasn't rude or disrespectful, but he has this look of, I'm being deadly serious. I'm sure it's the same with Scott Guthrie. It's just like, I'm being deadly serious.
Right.
This is a non-negotiable topic.
Yeah.
We are going to maintain the values. And some, you know, people don't see that all the time from him. They see the charismatic guy on the stage talking about cadence and quality and all this kind of stuff. They don't necessarily see him talking about that. Because I think from his perspective, it's just like, well, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. That's presumed. You know, it's electricity and it's water. It's always going to be there. But, you know, it's sometimes difficult because, you know, when I talk very positively of Mark, I know that some people are thinking, he's just saying that because he just wants to impress his boss. It's
right,
like,
right.
I have absolutely no qualms in telling Mark Shuttleworth what I think about anything. Because he's got, because, you know, I know that he won't fire me because I disagree with him.
Well, and that brings up a little question about, we talked about the term community manager. What do you think about the word advocate? Because sometimes I feel like most of the work that I'm doing is making sure that the little guy isn't forgotten. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I know Scott's plugged in, but he counts on me to be more plugged in.
Right.
I assume the same thing is with you and Mark. I mean, he can go to you and say, what's the word on the street?
Yeah.
And you really know.
He does that a lot. I mean, the thing that I like about him is that I've never really been a big fan of people who are not transparent in their intentions or their thinking. Mm-hmm. There's certain people who I've met in the past, and some of these people I've worked with, who, when you're speaking to them, you can see kind of that they're holding their cards close to their chest. You don't have that with Mark Shuttleworth. Certainly, I haven't experienced that internally. he is what he is, and he'll tell you what he's thinking, and he'll tell you if he's happy, he'll tell you if he's not happy. When he's happy, his eyes light up like a five-year-old kid on Christmas morning. That's one of the most motivating elements about it. If he's not happy, you will hear about it from, mm-hmm. you know, 40 feet above you. But he does look to, he's got that kind of, and I'm sure this is not unique to him, I'm sure this is the same with many founders, but he basically, he holds loyalty very, very strongly. So if he trusts you and you demonstrate trust through doing good stuff, not necessarily talking or being academic about stuff, if he trusts that you're doing good work, you won't hear from him all that often. But he'll check in and say, so how are things going? And what do you think about this? And he'll trust your judgment about it. He won't necessarily agree with you, but he'll trust your judgment. And I like that about him. And it's not, certainly not just with me. You know, I think he's very happy particularly right now, with the way Ubuntu is managed in terms of Ubuntu engineering. I mean, there's lots of different pieces of Canonical, but traditionally Ubuntu engineering has always been pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. We've generally had our stuff together and delivered the release every 6 months on time. We've never been late. Well, one time we moved it a little bit because the first LTS. And I think Mark trusts that kind of predictability, because the whole predictability, cadence, quality thing, he doesn't just say those words because they sound cool. It's kind of how he lives his life.
And it's become a value of Ubuntu. I mean, I know that I wake up every 6 months and, you know, update Ubuntu just to see what's changed.
Just to see what's in there.
Hey, April and October, we can count on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, you know, we talk a lot about Mark Shuttleworth, but it's not just him. I mean, it's the same with various other people. There's like a company culture of like a very honesty and frankness, which is what I cherish.
Well, I wanted to ask about transparency, because I'm hearing that do you think that to manage a community effectively that you've got to be transparent, or do you think that you have to hold your cards close sometimes and not tell the community something? I'm leaning towards transparency above all things.
My inclination is also transparency. I think there's kind of one of the things I most enjoy about working in community management is I'm really passionate about the profession. I love the idea of that I keep referring to it with people as the renaissance of community management, because, you know, I think when I got involved in this, I was essentially just soaking up things that other people were doing and trying to implement them in my own world. Mm-hmm. And now we're writing things down and we're having the community leadership summit. We're doing various other things. So we're learning about these different ways. And I think the original ethos was everything has to be completely open and transparent. And that's the only way. If you don't do that, then it's terrible. Mm-hmm. I think we're now learning as time goes on that there are nuances in that. And there are times when I think transparent by default is generally a good way to go. Mm-hmm. But there are times when strategically you can build and empower things better by just being a little bit more careful in how you do it. So I'll give you an example. We changed the branding in Ubuntu some years ago. And instead of just going out there and saying, this is the way it's going to be, you know, instead of essentially being just keeping the transparency in terms of like, okay, this is what we're working on, this is where we're going, everybody knows about it. The first thing that we did is we clued our governance boards in and said, look, we're going to be talking about this in a few weeks. And it wasn't really secret for any other reason, the fact that just a group of people had already been working on it. But we said to our governance boards, you know, this is where we're going, what's your input, what blah, 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 blah. And the impact of that was that the governing boards felt good that they were included in this. So it wasn't 100% transparent. It wasn't 100% closed, but they felt good that they were part of this. And that strengthened our relationship with our governing boards, I think. If we'd have just come out and said, okay, congratulations, here's the branding, I think that wouldn't have been as good of an experience. And if we'd have done everything in a completely, you know, let's all work together on the branding, it would have taken months to get through anything.
Right.
So there are nuances, but transparency by default, I think transparency is a good baseline that we should always go for.
Yeah, we really struggle with that as well. We have a group of, a council of, we call them insiders.
And right.
They're different from our MVPs. MVPs are the ones that are like, you know, they're really helpful and they're always answering questions. So you kind of knight them for a year to say, great job being a community member. You're awesome.
Yeah.
And then our insiders are kind of our trusted circle. It's like the council where we can literally show them stuff that we don't even know if this is garbage or not.
Right.
And we kind of say, well, if we showed that publicly all the time, people would think that we're nuts, because some of these ideas are nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we struggle a little bit, because sometimes we'll do something even for a couple of months and we release it and they go, you've been working on this for months. Well, you know, 6 weeks. Oh, you've been hiding stuff for us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're completely transparent with all the spikes and crazy ideas, like I'm sure that you had rebranding stuff that would have caused a revolt had you shown it in its early form.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well, the thing that's changed in my career as I've evolved with my own approach to community management is that when I started out, I always thought that the way you did a community manager was really there to make sure that all the infrastructure and documentation, all that kind of stuff, was in place, and then the community was ready to go and use it. So essentially, what you were doing is you were making sure that the stage was set for the community members to do great work. And now, I think the real challenge of community management is helping to grow leaders. Like, we have lots of people who want to help. I call them shovels. It's kind of how I affectionately refer to people, is you give them something to do and they will do an awesome job, but they need something to do. They need to be given something to do. Finding natural leadership and growing and harnessing and empowering natural leadership is the real challenge in community management. And a lot of that is a one-on-one personal thing. So for example, every week I have 5 to 10 calls with individual members of our community who I just hop on the phone with for half an hour a week. And it's not really mentoring. It's not like I'm spewing forth how it should be done. It's more of I'm here to try and support your growth as a leader in our community, because that's how you build the next generation. But that's a new thing, and that's changing, and we're still learning about this. But I think that's where a lot of the focus really should be in how you scale it up.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll put a link in the show notes, but folks really should check out the book, The Art of Community by Jono. And it's a fantastic book. I've got sitting here all marked up. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.